You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show, where you're taking a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And if you're listening to at least this series, we are now into the second episode with Dr. Mark Murphy, and we're talking about dental sleep medicine, where he's taking us through this entire step-by-step process. This is 2 of 6, and we're going to be talking about screening. If you didn't hear the first one on physiology, go back and listen to that so you get some perspective of what we're talking about. But this is a huge opportunity in your practice. It's also a huge epidemic in the world, and it's not going away in dentistry. I feel strongly that dentists are perfectly positioned to be the heroes in this scenario if you already aren't. But the question always becomes, how the heck do I put this into play? How do I make it work in my general practice or specialty practice, whatever? And you are listening to the guy who's going to help us unravel that mystery. Now, if you're joining us again for the first time, I always want to welcome you to an incredibly warm community where we're always learning. Make sure you go and check out our Facebook page, Best Practices Powered by ACT Dental, where you can see dentists helping dentists. No egos here. We're all in a community in a very noble profession to help each other. And that's one of the coolest parts about this journey is later on, you realize dentistry is pretty cool. Like, there's some good peeps in dentistry. You know, it's really, of all the stupid stuff I could have done in my life, I ended up in dentistry, and I'm crazy grateful. This is a lot of good peeps, you know?
We're lucky to have you here, Kirk.
Hey, I'm lucky you would take me in, you know, as one of those kids.
Well, that it began as a project. Bringing you into dentistry began as a project, to be honest with you. But
I feel like I was that kind of kid walking around at the career fair, and you guys were all picking like who you'd want on your kickball team. And they're like, I don't know. We'll take a chance on this guy. Come on in, but don't screw it up. So I'm glad I got invited to the party. So I'm so glad to have you here, brother. You know, we've been talking in this series about dental sleep medicine.
Yep.
And now we're into part two, which is going to be the screening part. But tee this up for us. Like, where are we? If I'm looking at a map of Hartsfield mm-hmm. Airport and you see a little dot that says you are here, describe what else we're looking at and the dot that we're looking at today.
So, yeah. The picture I would put is that in a practice, we're going to see people that we think are at risk for obstructive sleep apnea, and we're going to engage them in a conversation. We're going to screen them for sleep apnea. And if they're at risk, we're going to try and encourage them to go get tested. Okay. And how they get tested, whether that's your local sleep physician, whether you order up the test, which you can do in most states, but not all states, we'll worry about those details when we get to testing. So I've screened a patient. They need to go get tested. Once they get tested, they come back. If they have obstructive sleep apnea, if they're severe, probably the world is going to talk to them about a CPAP, and that's fine. If they're mild and moderate, we're probably going to talk to them about an oral appliance. If they're severe and won't wear a CPAP, let's try an oral appliance. But really, for severe cases, it's okay to try CPAP first. It's still where medicine and dentistry are, and they're balancing all that out. And there's still a lot of sleep physicians that won't be very favorable in recommending oral appliances. Once we decide that they're going to need an oral appliance, we're going to take impressions. We're going to take a bite relationship. We'll do an exam. We'll send them away. They'll come back in a couple of weeks. We'll fit them for the oral appliance. We'll teach them how to get their bite back in the morning. We'll follow them up for a period of time based on what we're able to do with them in treatment. When we think they're in the right treatment position, when their signs and symptoms have gotten better, maybe we use a little thing called a pulse oximeter that you'll learn about in one of the later sessions, and we get some objective data that says, yeah, I think the patient's in pretty good shape. We'll send them back for another sleep test. So it starts with a sleep test, ends with a sleep test that's diagnostic, and a sleep test that confirms they're in a treatment position. Just like if you went to the physician and they said, you know, let's draw some blood and your cholesterol is high. What do? They give you pills. Take your pills. What do? They draw your blood again and they see if that brought the cholesterol down. If it did, they're done. If they didn't, they may be up your dose. They may be trying another medication. Same thing here. It's about dose management in treatment, trying to find the right treatment that's right for you, the right position of your mandible to open your airway. Boom, you're treated. So now back to here. We've talked about physiology, so we have a little bit of an understanding about sleep. Now we need to say, how do I look around in my patient population and decide this person, but not that person, should be screened, knowing that's an imperfect science.
Right.
That's where we're at.
So I'm going to ask one of my later questions now, just because this came to my mind.
Because you always do.
I'm fascinated by this stuff. Okay. Screening. Dental sleep medicine, are patients static or dynamic? Because if I screen a patient once, it doesn't mean that they're never a candidate for this. Static, dynamic. Talk about that.
Well, just like in periodontal disease, today your gums look great and they look healthy, okay? But 3 years from now, life could be very different for you.
Right.
Your home care could be different. Your stress level could be different. And periodontal disease is episodic. And so too, we'll see people change. One of the risk factors is age. So everybody's aging. So right. Even if you never gained a pound and never became obese, even if you were female and never became male, you're still going to age. So one of your risk factors is going to come into play, because as you're going to learn, when we look at this sort of a screening algorithm, I love you use the word algorithm all the time. I'm going to throw it right back at you. The algorithm we use has age as one of the eight factors that we look at very closely. And if you have three of the eight factors, you're at moderate risk. Four, you're at high risk. So a male, that's a risk factor. Age, that's a, so an over 50 male has two strikes already. Mm-hmm. So that's the same thing. It is definitely going to be dynamic. Our weight can change. Our age is changing. Our sleep patterns are changing. Medications we're taking are changing. So there's very dynamic and very fluid. We'll see people. I can think of several good examples. My son is one. I talk about him all the time. Had obstructive sleep apnea, lost 35 pounds. His scores went down. He didn't have to wear CPAP anymore. Or an oral appliance. COVID comes along, guess what happened? Put some pounds back on, guess what? He's wearing his oral appliance again. Because just like a dial, turning it up, turning it down, which we can do with lots of things in life, one of his dials is weight. One of his dials is weight.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to do the same thing again. We're going to kind of do a Pulp Fiction, go forward and come back. Because I want to take the vantage point of a 32-year-old dentist listening to this. Okay, Mark, take me through, if I'm going to do screening in my practice, take me through best practices. Like, what's an optimal best practices algorithm? Now, I'm also going to follow up, Mark, with a question like this. I may have a hard enough time doing a comprehensive exams for all my patients. So, like, show me best practices and then help me as a dentist watching this. How would I put in a productive or, you know, effective screening system with my team, with my patients? Where do we start?
So I'm going to start by asking, what do you already screen for? And I'm pretty sure that if we were in a room full of people, if I had 100 people in the room and I said, hey, everybody, raise your hand if you, at every single hygiene visit, do an oral cancer exam. I'm pretty sure every single hand in the room would go up, right? Mm-hmm. Every hand would go up.
Right.
And I'd say, okay, now keep your hands up for a minute, keep your hands up. Now, if you ever found an oral cancer on a patient during one of those screenings, keep your hand up, most of the hands would come down. And there'd be a smattering of hands, probably 3 to 5, maybe 7% of the hands in the room might stay up. I'd say, so because the incidence of finding that is so low, do you ever do it again? Oh, every single visit, right? Even though the incidence of you finding an oral cancer, the incidence of you impacting somebody's life is very small, you're willing to invest the time, the effort, and energy. Here comes a tough one. No matter what.
Right.
You would never think of skipping that oral cancer screening exam.
Tell us why. Because the 3 to 5 that have their hands up, if you said, tell me about that patient, they'd probably start crying.
And they tell you, Amen. Great. Thank you for tying that in emotionally. Yes, 100%. That person said, oh my God, this happened and I saw this patient, this lesion, and they lost half their tongue, but they're still alive now because of that. It would have done this. Talk about changing lives. Right. Saving lives is changing lives, keeping right. lives. So what if I told you that I needed you to screen for something during that hygiene visit, like oral cancer,
okay.
that happens in 20 to 25% of your patients. And then when you do that, you can save their life, no matter what. Could you commit to that no matter what? Well, if you don't think you want to, I would remind you that in 2017, the American Dental Association resolved, formal resolution, that we are responsible and capable of screening for sleep-related breathing disorders in our patient population, because physicians don't see them like right. we do every 6 months.
Right.
So we have the opportunity, far better than any other healthcare provider, to screen a population of patients in our care for a list of stuff.
Right.
And we review their medical history, review their dental history. For God's sakes, if you can't ask 9 questions on your health history that are about sleepiness, for God's sakes, if you can't look at a person and you know their age and you know their sex,
right,
and if you can't gauge their BMI or ask them about snoring or ask just a couple of questions you know from their health history, you can screen and profile that patient as to whether or not they're likely to need a sleep test. This is not hard to do. It is easier than wrapping gauze around a tongue and pulling it out from side to side, which is what right. we do.
Right. And if you're the young dentist we were just talking about, who's 32 going, okay, I'm in, let me help you what happens further down the road. If you go to the Panky Institute, like you should and will, or Dawson or Spear or anything, you're going to find that there's 5 pillars of diagnosis. So it's going to show up restoratively later anyway, when we're talking about biologic aesthetics, you're going to see every single great thinker in dentistry is going to say, I don't care how gorgeous your dentistry is, if the patient can't breathe from the get-go, what have we really done? So this is bigger than just the hygiene screening conversation. Yeah. A dentist has got to see the big picture of how it's all connected. It's all connected. Wouldn't you agree?
So just like you said, at Spear, at Dawson, at Panky, at COIS, at LVI, wherever you go for your education, I'm going to put 20 or 30 units of Crown & Bridge in somebody's mouth. I'm going to do some fancy implant dentistry. If I haven't thought about airway-centric prosthodontics. If I haven't thought about, I'm going to build this incredible platform and still keep their airway compromised, that's going to become the new definition of, I hate to say this, malpractice. How about if I restore somebody in an airway-unfriendly position that I would have had a choice to do that in a more airway-friendly position, that's an outcome that I could have prevented.
Right.
In fact, if I had a patient in my practice that has obstructive sleep apnea and looks like they're at risk, they're over 50, they're overweight, they complain about tired and snoring, they ask me about it or something like that, and I don't refer them to somebody to get care, 3, 5, 7 years down the road, here's what we're going to see. Just like we saw about undiagnosed periodontitis, we're going to eventually see somebody come back and sue their dentist and say, it says right here in this resolution with the American Dental Association, you're supposed to be checking for that stuff. We've been coming to you for 15 years. You've never talked to us about this. My husband just had a heart attack and died. I'm waiting for that. I don't want that to happen. I don't ever want that to happen, but that's going to happen. Kirk, you can see the writing on the wall. There's going to be an undiagnosed fill in the blank. Now, that's not the reason to do this, to cover your ass. That's not the reason to do this. You can probably blank out the word ass. Oops, I said it again. Ass. There we go. So it's a donkey.
We don't have any sponsors either, so it doesn't matter.
That's good. So it's not about cover your ass. It's about helping your patients be healthier, okay? Right. And it isn't like you don't have to treat sleep. I'm not suggesting you have to treat sleep, but oh, wait a minute. I have to screen for perio, don't I? Oh, I have to screen for occlusal disease and maybe send somebody for orthodontic. Oh, I have to screen for impacted wisdom teeth and send them. I don't have to do those specialty things. I don't have to do them, but I have to screen for them. Right. I can't have undiagnosed periodontitis, undiagnosed third molar impactions that are causing problems, undiagnosed malocclusion that I didn't assume to the orthodontist for. I can't do that. Undiagnosed endodontic therapy. I don't have to be a specialist. I don't have to be a sleep doc.
Right.
I don't have to be a sleep dentist. But I got to screen. And right. It doesn't take long. And so whether I can reach into your heart and have you want to help, or whether I want to scare the hell out of you about what will happen if you don't, the American College of Prosthodontists wrote a paper, a white paper, the same year as the ADA resolution, saying that if you make a bite splint for somebody, a bite splint, which I made hundreds and hundreds of bite splints, I taught at Panky, for God's sakes. And if you make it in centric relation or MIP, that opens the vertical dimension a little bit. If you open the vertical dimension and you don't protrude the mandible in an airway patient, you're actually closing the airway back here. Again, today's standards, that would be inappropriate practice. I hate saying malpractice. That would be inappropriate practice, not an untoward outcome, an inappropriate practice.
Right.
I think you'd be liable.
Right. So I'm going to say I'm the young dentist. Okay, you've opened my heart. You know, you've got
thank you.
Okay, so I'm in. Now, take me through, and my first thought is, okay, baby steps. So take me through, like, when we talk about screening, give me some perspective of what my hygienists already complain that they can't get enough done in, you know, well, God forbid they're doing 40 minutes. That's malpractice, I think, anyway. But that's my own statement on that.
One for you.
Ding, ding. You know, the second thing is, okay, first of all, even if I convince them to add this to the screen, first of all, help me understand it. Then, Mark, how do I help them understand it? Because I probably have three or two hygienists that I have to explain the why. Explain the why and the how for me so I can go to my hygienist in a screening scenario.
So we as a team have a responsibility to our patients, okay? And I would not tell them that this is what you have to do. I would engage my team in a conversation, create some curiosity in their minds about this, help them learn with me. Maybe we go take a sleep class together. Maybe we listen to a podcast like this during a lunch meeting. I want it to come from the ground up, not from the top down. If I'm telling them what to do and they're not interested or curious about it, it's really hard to become a sustainable action. You know that from a coaching perspective.
Okay, pause right there because that is gold right there. The second you start telling people to do something, they're going to resent it and claws come out. And now, even if you get them to do it, they're doing it for your reasons and not because they want to do it, right?
Totally. The goal is to create enough curiosity that your team says to you, well, we should be screening our patients. And then you kind of play, God, I know, but how would we ever fit that in? Let them help you solve that problem. Right. Let them help you that on their health history, that when the patient updates their health history, which they maybe do on a portal online, maybe they do it in the waiting room before the appointment, maybe you go over their health history with them, whatever part of that protocol there is, we just insert 9 questions about sleepiness. And then we're consciously doing this screening, looking at something called the stop bang. It's really an algorithm that looks at certain characteristics of a patient to tell me whether they're at higher or lower risk. And the idea here is twofold. The Epworth Sleepiness Scale, which is this 9 question survey that patients can answer, very non-invasive, very non-threatening, doesn't scare anybody, easy questions, add it to your health history, piece of cake protocol. That's the door opening piece of conversation. It doesn't have a high correlation to whether or not they have sleep apnea. Don't let that bother you. Most insurance companies need that information or they're not going to pay whoever makes somebody a sleep device or a CPAP. So it's required somewhere along the line anyhow, but it's a great icebreaker conversation. And then you can look at the score on that. And if the score is high and you put that together with a male over 50, overweight, who snores, you can have an easy, open conversation about how they're at risk. If the number is low and you make the same observation, right, you can have an easy, open conversation of how to help. Isn't it interesting that even though you look like you're at high risk for obstructive sleep apnea, you don't seem to have much daytime drowsiness? Right. See, there's no way you can't find a way to connect the dots to have a conversation about screening and risk. And now you don't have to hogtie the patient and make them go get a sleep test. You simply have to, like you would do about a broken tooth, like you would do about periodontitis, like you would do about an impacted molar or a missing tooth, you need to create some curiosity and co-discovery in their minds. And I'm going to tell you, when you start having these conversations, 8 out of 10 times, yeah, I've got a brother. Yeah, my sister-in-law. Yeah, my dad used to. Yeah, I do snore. I've been told I might have sleep. This is not in a vacuum.
Right.
Once in a while, it's a surprise and in a vacuum, but not as often as the others. And now you're this supportive player in something, and you look great in the patient's eyes.
Right. I want to put a bookmark in what you just said because, again, I'm going to go back to the whole practice development management side of things, just by the fact that you're asking a higher quality question is going to completely separate you from every other dentist they've been.
Totally.
And you can start to describe why you take a look at the whole patient. And you've been heavily involved in the education piece of this. Now you're starting to separate yourself from every other dental experience they've ever had. And they go, I like her. I like him. Like, they care. See, what you do either.
Nobody else has ever asked me that question. That's,
right. Right. Absolutely. You know, you know how this is. It doesn't even have to be in medicine or dentistry. You can always tell the quality of someone's character by the quality of their questions. Not so totally. Much tell you. It's like, wow, that's a really good question. You know,
I've learned so many things hanging around you and listening to you coach and talk. And I don't think I ever actually had my own dental practice when I was hanging around you. So I don't know that you had an impact on my practice, but you've had an impact on hundreds and thousands of other practices. And if somebody were to call you and say, hey, how much does a crown cost? You wouldn't tell them the number. You wouldn't give them a price. You'd say, well, what kind of a crown are you talking about? And the person would go, what do you mean? What kind of a crown? I didn't know there was more than one kind. Now you've opened the door. You've taught me that. You opened the door to a conversation by not answering the question, but maybe asking a right question. That's a beautiful thought. That's what this does. This opens the conversation.
You're giving me way too much credit. That is, I don't know who said it, but somebody in dentistry many years ago said this. The question.
I'm not saying it was original. We steal all these great ideas. Steal
all this. The question is the answer in dentistry.
Amen.
It is. Like, the better you get at questions, the more impactful you'll be in anything you do.
Mary Osborne, and you know Mary well.
Yes.
She said this one time, and I just love it because coming out of her mouth, she's so proper about everything. She said, stay in the question and keep asking questions about the problem and talking about the problem and asking about the problem until your lips bleed.
Yeah.
Or the patient says, well, what do you think we can do about that? And so what you're trying to do is get that patient's awareness to come up, not by telling, but by asking. Same thing here.
Well, the same thing too. You're going to create intimacy with me. I'm probably going to tell you stuff I've never told anyone else. If you stay curious and in the question, you know, the best treatment coordinators I've ever met in dentistry, I'm like, I just told you something I don't think I've ever told another human being.
Because they were listening and asking, you knew they cared and you came to trust them. And you said, I can peel back one of my layers and expose a little bit of myself to you. I love that. I love that.
You had me at hello.
That's right. That's right. So these patients are sitting there in a typical ReCare visit.
Yes.
And now they've got a few more questions on this health history screening form. You're doing some observation with them. And so you know that in this instance, because of this piece of information and your visual survey, and you know that they have hypertension, whatever it might be, I need to have a screening conversation with this patient. Now, right. That doesn't mean I have to upset my apple cart. I could do that there in the normal space of a time of a hygiene visit without any significant change, without any significant bump in my day. If I expect to have the full conversation about sleep apnea in that appointment or when the dentist comes in, that's going to screw up the apple cart big time. So the idea here is we create an awareness, and then we would schedule the consultation if I'm going to be treating inside, or make the recommendation. It isn't like we have to provide this full level of education. We're not going to do 6 one-hour podcasts about sleep apnea to this patient and a hygiene ReCare visit, for God's sakes. Right. We need to crack open the door. And you know what happens with patients. I might knock on that door, and you might not open this time. And in 6 months, I might rap on it again, and you peek. And two or three times down the road, the door is open, and you say, come on in, let's talk about this. You're right.
Right.
And now the conversation unfolds. But you're making progress in the relationship.
Right. Now go back to this. So in the screening, we're going to add a few extra questions.
Yep.
But think about this too, because you've seen this. You've been doing dentistry long. The health history forms are getting weirder. I mean, there's some very interesting stuff. The amount of prescription medications on there, like, you can take the questions, you can see what's going on, and you don't have to diagnose, you don't have to accuse. You can kind of see a little bit of a pattern or a puzzle here to add to whether or not this is a good candidate to have this conversation with, right?
You can. Without the Epworth Sleepiness Scale questions, the ESS, without the Epworth scale, you can look at a patient, and in your mind, you can do this stop bang algorithm, STOPBANG, and we'll go over that. Every letter stands for one of the things you're observing.
Okay.
And when you do that sort of screening in your mind, you immediately know whether there's two or three or four or five. You might not know if they snore. You might not know if somebody observed them stopping breathing at night or gasping for air. But there's at least six of them that you can get pretty easy access to like that. And so you know that this patient's more of a candidate, less of a candidate. And when you decide to make this move and start screening, you know, I don't have to screen every single patient all at once in my practice. Maybe I decide that I'm going to start screening all the males in my practice over 50 because there's two positives right there. So let's go through a six-month cycle of screening males over 50. Then maybe the next six-month cycle we'll do females over 50 and other males. And then maybe the next six. So maybe over an 18-month time period, I have an opportunity to introduce this screening protocol and become more adept at it, more conversational about it, and more intentional about it, because that's important too. Okay. You know, you could have a sign in the waiting room that's passive. I can open up a conversation with you about this that's non-threatening and non-judgmental. That's more intentional. And so the idea here is I want to be intentional about who I choose to have conversations with. I might still have some passive information around the office about sleep apnea, because there might be somebody who says, well, my husband, or, well, I have thought about that. Somebody might not fit your profile and say, I've been told I gasp for air when I'm sleeping. So right. Still, you want to have some passive information, something on a brochure, something on a Facebook post, something in your social media, something on your website, passively. But it's more about these intentional conversations with the patients that you think are at risk.
Right. So can we go in? It's stop, bang, S-T-O-P-B-A-N-G, right?
Yeah. So do you snore?
Okay.
That's S.
All right.
Are you tired? That could
be. Wait, go back to do you snore? So help me with this. Is this going to be like, do you grind? Where people go, no, I don't, type of a thing. I mean, what can I expect as a dental professional when you ask people, are people aware that they snore? Have they heard these? Because you know this. Do you grind your teeth? No, I don't.
So there's an app called Snore Lab where your patients can record their old snoring if they don't trust their partner, if they don't have one, or they don't have any idea. Snore Lab, S-N-O-R-E-L-A-B. It's a free app. It'll record three nights of snoring for you and give you a snore score. You'll see in some of the slides and the supportive material the difference between a patient that's untreated and a patient that's treated and how much their snore score and the amount of epic, that kind of snoring, how much that goes down. But I wouldn't start off by asking those questions. I was simply going down the list. I would start off by saying, I don't know if this patient snores or ever gasps for air, if anybody's ever seen them stop breathing at night. So I really have six questions that I can look at them. Okay. I've got the Epworth sleepiness scale, so I know if they're tired. All right. Do they have high blood pressure or an arrhythmia? That's on their health history. Are they overweight? Is their BMI 30 or more? I'm going to stand up in front of your camera for a second. I've got on jeans. I've got on pants. You're lucky to see that. I've got on jeans. So look at me. Not bad for an old guy, right? My right. BMI is 29.8. I am this close to being obese. If I gain 5 pounds, I tip to 30. So you don't have to look grotesquely fat to right. be obese. And a BMI of 30, especially in an incredibly muscular physique like mine, I know what everybody's thinking. With that build, how could you be obese? Obese is not hard to be. So you only have to be a tiny bit. So if somebody looks overweight to you at all, they're probably obese. So yeah. I've got that one. What's their age? You know that age that's in their health.
Wait, go back. Cause I'm tracking you here. So the first, when we're talking about stop bang, I missed one.
So let's keep it organized. I'm going to run down the stop bang. Then I'll come back to the six you can do without asking. Okay. You snore? Are you tired? Has anyone observed you stopping breathing while you're sleeping? S-T-O. P, high blood pressure. Do you have high blood pressure or an arrhythmia? B, is your BMI 30 or more? A, what's your age, 50 and over? Neck circumference, 15 for women, 17 for men. You can tell by looking if somebody's got a big neck or not. Gender, are you male? So S-T-O-P, snoring, tired, observed, pressure. Bang. BMI, age, neck, and gender. So I know you're male. You look like you're overweight. You've got a big neck. Oops, that's three. You're over 50. Ding, 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 ding. High risk. I'm now 90% sure you have obstructive sleep apnea. If you have four, I am 90% sure you have obstructive sleep apnea. So now the intentional conversation is, you know, I can't help but noticing with this sleepiness scale that we asked you and you being 50 and male, Now, that already puts you into a higher risk category. Has anyone ever told you that you snore or anything at night when you're sleeping? Yes, my wife says I snore. Has she ever seen you stop breathing like that? So, you know, you're having the conversation, you go, well, actually, you have six of the eight risk factors for obstructive sleep apnea. Right. I said, and that really concerns me. Oh, what do you think we should do about that? Well, I'd love to have you get a sleep test. Well, how do we do that? Well, that's all covered by your medical insurance. Let me refer you to somebody who does that because we don't really treat sleep here. Or let me order you up a sleep test. Or let me send you a physician. That'll be down the road. We'll talk about those pathways. The idea here is I have an algorithm that's pretty darn predictive
right.
for sleep apnea. And it's not very invasive to get that information. Intentional conversations will do it.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Barrett is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Yeah, I love this. This is a great framework. I mean, anyone can get your brain around. I mean, you could probably even create printed literature with, you know.
We would have a poster and we would say, here's some of the signs and symptoms of sleep apnea. And here's some of the risks and comorbidities. Most companies, Prosomnus will do it. Most companies will do it. They'll have posters on that. Now, the Epworth Sleepiness Scale does not have a high correlation to whether or not the patient has sleep apnea, but it's a great conversation starter. In kids, it's something entirely different. It's the BEARS screen, B-E-A-R-S.
Okay, wait, B-E-A-R-S. Now walk me through.
You're jumping to the end, and no, here I come to the end right there for you.
See, you're giving me stuff we can use right away. That's what I love. Totally. You know what I mean?
Are there any bedtime issues? Any excessive daytime sleepiness, bedtime excessive, any awakenings at night, any problems with regularity or duration of sleep, so B-E-A-R, and finally, any snoring. Uh-oh, here's the bad news. I needed 4 out of 8 on the stop bang to be at high risk. In the BEARS, you need 1. Any one of those, and you're pretty sure that child has sleep apnea. My granddaughter snored a little bit. My grandson snored a little bit, one from each kid. My son's son, my daughter's daughter. With one of them, with the boy, tonsils and adenoids, okay? With the daughter at 5.5 rapid palatal expansion, grow her bony box. So even if the problems look the same, snoring, Sleep apnea, which can lead to a lot of daytime issues like irritability, ADHD, okay, attention deficit. So there's all kinds of things that come out of this. I'm not a pediatric airway. I know a little bit about it. We get somebody else to talk to you about that. The solution could be very different. One, the challenge might be large tonsils and adenoids. The other might be the bony box is too small. So my granddaughter's teeth lined up so beautifully and perfectly like this little primary teeth, which meant there was no room for the permanent ones. So let's create some great big spaces, and they looked kind of funny for a while, and she had to wear all these funky retainers. I can't believe kids can wear that stuff. She was fantastic, okay? The hardest part of the whole thing was putting toothpaste, which was mint-flavored, on a stainless steel crown she had when she had to get her mouth scanned. She hated the taste of the mint. That was the biggest trouble she would tell you she had with this whole process. I don't want that toothpaste anymore. Yeah. So now she's got this great big maxilla, great big mandible. Her tonsils have gotten smaller without surgery. Isn't that amazing? She doesn't snore anymore. She never had any behavioral issues or bedtime issues. She slept great. She always has. But, you know, you have a chance in these kids to maybe change a long lineage. And to the person who says, man, are you sure you want to do that to a 5.5-year-old? Wait, you want them to have 5 years of hell and treat them when they're 11?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the opposite scenario. You don't. And then the kid goes to school, and then the teacher says the kid can't focus. So the parent takes the kid to the doctor. The doctor writes a prescription for speed, and the kid's on it. And that's how we treat this for the rest of their lives.
Just like the commercial I talked about in the last episode with the prescription drug to keep you awake during the day if you have obstructive right. sleep apnea. Duh, that's not how you treat it.
Right.
So when we know that a person's at risk, again, if we're going to treat it, I want to move them towards a sleep test. or refer them for a sleep test. If I'm not going to treat it, I want to at least get them into somebody's office who does treat that and can have a conversation. That could still be direct to a physician. It could be to another dentist who's a friend of mine who does sleep. I get probably 60% of my patients from other dentists in the area because I don't practice as a dentist anymore, and about 40% from local sleep physicians. But the idea is we want to, for lack of a better term, close that patient from you're at risk to moving them into a test. And here's the deal. We talked about this. I need to get inside their head and their heart and make them curious enough, because when you look at the patient pathway for decision making, and maybe we could think about learning ladder from unaware, aware, to interested or belief, to trust, to commitment, to finally taking action. However you want to look at this patient pathway. In medicine, here's what they know. In medicine, on medical conditions, patients have three questions. Do I have this? Is it serious? Can you treat it? And I don't care whether that's cancer, hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol, obstructive sleep apnea. When they study the patient pathway in medicine, which they've done far better than we have in dentistry, those are the three questions that pop up. Yeah. So I need to set in motion in my intentional conversation with the patient a tone about how serious this is and give them hope that we can treat it, because I need them to go find out.
Right.
And I can't get them to want to know if they have it. I can't answer that question without a sleep test. I can just say you're at high risk.
Right.
And people like you normally do end up having obstructive sleep apnea based on these findings, but the only way we can find out for sure is get a test. So let's get that ordered up.
Yeah. So this is a leading question. I'm going to lead you with this.
Sure.
Because I kind of think how you, and we talked about the ready, fire, then aim thing later. You don't need to figure out the billing to start the screening.
No.
Even if you don't treat dental sleep medicine, I think it's an important start to a standard of care type of a thing. Can you talk about that? Like sometimes you talked about it in the previous, sometimes you just got to get started. Like just get started, you know, and you don't have to figure it out perfectly. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. Well, just like you don't have to treat perio, right?
Right.
But you have to get started in screening for perio and making the referral. Same thing. So I have to get started in screening. I don't have a choice. And I care about my patients, and I have a responsibility, moral, ethical, maybe even legal. So I want to get started in screening. I don't have to figure out how I'm going to do all this treatment, because first off, I've probably got a month or 6 weeks or maybe 8 weeks of a circle of that person to disappear, go get tested, and come back if they're going to go get tested, or referring them to another doctor, whatever I'm going to do. In dentistry, we often wait until we have all the answers to every part of every issue that could possibly come up before we pull the trigger. And I try to remind people, and I'm going to tell you a story. Sadly, it's 100% true. I went through a training program with the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, so I'm a diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine. It means I've been trained. I've had hundreds of hours of sleep training, been doing it for a long time, treated lots of patients, got lots of experience. You can go through the same training program I did with the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. You could treat yourself and maybe your spouse during that program, so you turn in your two cases. You could pass the test, and I could bless you as a diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine. And I get on the phone with, this has happened more than once, with these diplomates, and they want to talk about setting up systems in their office. They want to talk about different ways in billing and what software advantages and disadvantages. And I said, well, that's great. This is a super conversation. How much sleep are you doing so far? Oh, I haven't done a case yet. And here's what I say, Kirk. You can't learn how to swim by reading a book. You have to get wet.
Yes.
Don't call me again about this till you're in the pool and we can talk about how to swim. And they go, I know, but I just want to, no, we're done here.
Right.
I can't talk about that stuff down the road till you get in the water with me and I'll show you how to make a simple freestyle stroke. As dentists, when we did our first crown prep, we looked at what they looked like, we picked up the high speed, and we had at it. And I'm willing to bet that everybody listening right now, their crown preps last week looked better than the ones that they did when they first started practicing, better than when they were first in dental school. I'm sure they've learned and improved. But at some point, we had to jump in the water and get wet. And if you don't take the first step, it's pretty hard to take the 10th and the 100th and the 1,000th step. The journey of of 1,000 miles begins with yet a single step. I made up that quote. It was not confusing.
No, you didn't.
I made that up. So yes, they do have to get started. They do have to get in the water. They do have to get wet. You don't have to be perfect, but you have to scream and get these people help.
Yeah. And you and I talked, like the great Bill Lockhart said this years ago, perfection is deadly. Just all we need is progress. Actually, he goes, excellence was our goal, but you need progress. And perfection was God's job. Every once in a while it was perfect. Certainly wasn't my doing, but like sometimes you just got to get started. Any last thoughts on screening before we wrap this up? And I do want you to go back and give us the goal again with the framework, stop, bang, and then the Bears, steps just real quickly. Cause I freaking love that. So give us a
boring, tired, observed, stop breathing, pressure or arrhythmias, high blood pressure, arrhythmias, BMI, age, neck size, and gender.
Okay.
And Bears is bedtime issues, excessive sleepiness, awakenings at night, the regularity or normal duration of sleep, making sure that they're sleeping well, and snoring, BEARS. So you got stop, bang, and Bears. The Epworth Sleepiness Scale is 9 questions, 0 to 3. How likely are you to doze off driving a car, sitting and watching TV, in a conversation with somebody, stopped in traffic, riding as a passenger? 9 questions, 0 to 3. A score of 9 or above, sleepy.
Love it.
And so that's the conversation starter. Intentional conversations about their risk, about their health, but with the goal of, I got to give them hope that there's treatment. They need to know how serious this condition is. So it's not just talking about snoring and bad sleep. It's talking about all those comorbidities we talked about.
Right.
All the stuff we talked about in that physiology section. Heart attack, 23 times more likely, 4 times more likely to have a stroke, 5 times more likely to die of COVID if you get it. They need to understand this is serious stuff. Yeah, and it sneaks up on you. We didn't know this 20 years ago. We know it now. So we're screening for it now. So let's get you tested. Got to get them curious.
I loved it. So this is awesome. Any last thoughts on screening?
No, it just, you screen for so many other things in your practice. This is another screen with simple tools. It sets a groundwork for you to be a better dentist, a better leader for your team, setting an example. And certainly if you choose to have an opportunity to treat another condition that falls under our guidelines in dentistry, where we don't have to be responsible for the diagnosis and the prescription. We only have to be responsible to take upper and lower impressions and a bite relationship and deliver some pretty simple dentistry to them.
It's awesome, brother. This is fantastic. Now, the next one, we're going to go into testing. But Mark, I know people are going to be listening to this. So for the benefit of people just listening on their phones or iTunes or Stitcher, how the heck do I get a hold of you? And tell me what your company does. Like, what does your company do?
Sure. So mmurphy@prosomnus.com, P-R-O-S-O-M-N-U-S, prosomnus, you know, sleep, for sleep. So I lecture, teach, I'm the lead clinical faculty for a company called Prosomnus Sleep Technologies out of California. We make clearly the best sleep devices of anyone. We use artificial intelligence, we use robotic manufacturing. They're incredibly accurate. They're smaller, stronger, et cetera. So nobody makes devices like we do, period. I mean, they really don't. We have changed the game in dental sleep medicine. Instead of making these in a dental laboratory with cold cure acrylics, metal attachments and stuff, we've taken this to the next level. And we're designing devices that will earn the trust of physicians because physicians control about $4.5 billion worth of sleep. And we get about $100 to $150 million worth of sleep in dentistry that we get to do, not in terms of fees that we would charge in our practice, but in terms of laboratory bills. And so just a 10% shift in prescribing patterns in the American physicians, dental sleep physicians, would triple the market that we see for this. So we're trying to make the kind of devices that they will trust. When you go to some of the Scandinavian countries, already some of them are in 30, 40, 50, 70% of the patients get oral appliance therapy first, CPAP therapy last. Hardly anybody wears a CPAP.
Wow.
Give a CPAP to 100 people, 40% will be wearing it at the end of the year. Give an oral appliance to 100 people, 90% will be wearing it at the end of the year, maybe 95. Now, the efficacy is much higher for a CPAP. It's nearly 100%. But if they only wear it 40% of the time, and by the way, they define compliance as 4.5 hours a night, 5 nights out of 7. We define compliance in oral appliance therapy as 7 hours a night, 7 nights a week. So if I have something that's only 75% efficacious, oral appliance therapy, but you wear it 90% of the time, it has 55-65% effectiveness at reducing disease. But if you have a CPAP that's 100% efficacious, only worn less than 40% of the time, at best, it's maybe 40% effective at eliminating disease. And so the challenge is getting a shift towards oral appliance therapy as being a more successful solution. We're not going to do that with old, crappy, shitty, discolored devices. We need to be more scientific and professional about how we practice dental sleep medicine.
Yeah.
That's what I would always teach people. That's my job at Presonus, is to teach that.
Amen, brother. Well, you're an excellent teacher, and this is a phenomenon that is not going away. And I highly encourage you, if you're a dentist listening, get involved and get wet. Get in water.
Get wet. Get in the pool. Get in the pool. And we'll talk about testing next time. That'll be the easiest conversation we're going to have.
Yeah. And a reminder, just if you're listening to this in the middle of the series, we're going to go on to testing and we're going to have two on treatment. And then we're going to get to the billing and the financial pieces of it. So make sure you listen to all of them. Reach out to Mark. Mark is incredibly helpful. He's a super human being and just a great dude. And brother, I appreciate you so much.
You
so,
make me like me, for God's sake.
Hey, that's what we're all here for. I feel better just talking to you about anything. I don't care what it's about.
I hang with you anytime. You know that.
Dude, you're the best. You're the best. All right. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else here. Hey, guys, thanks for tuning in to the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, do us a favor, hit the share button, share with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see on the show. Click on the show notes. You can see all of Mark's personal information. Well, not all of his personal information, but all of his email address, how to get a hold of him. Check that out. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.